Support for this public radio podcast is provided by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. And by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy-efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works.
More money for banks.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The Federal Reserve is stepping in again to help banks and mortgage lenders. This morning, the Fed said it would provide $200 billion in Treasury bonds. The banks can take those and dump the bad mortgage bonds they have. That'll make it easier for the banks to borrow money. This swap may be a way for the Fed to avoid a big cut in interest rates next week. There's still a lot of concern that hacking interest rates will make inflation worse. Inflation Exhibit A, oil prices. They touched $109 a barrel this morning. Jill Barshay has more on the oil market.
Oil's been steadily climbing for 8 years now, but the last 2 months have really been crazy. James Hamilton is an economist at the University of California, San Diego. He specializes in oil price shocks. He says speculators are borrowing money on the cheap and pouring it into oil futures.
I think the lowering of interest rates is the biggest single factor. It basically reduces the downside risk for commodity speculators.
Speculators may be hitting jackpot, but the price spike is no good for the economy. Hamilton says historically, oil price increases are often followed by recessions. He's already seeing bad omens. Both Detroit auto sales and consumer confidence are down.
If consumption falls, we're surely in a recession.
Hamilton says the oil price spike is a sobering lesson in monetary economics. The Fed is lowering rates to keep the economy out of a recession, but it's running up the price of oil, which could push the economy into one. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
The price of oil is also running up our import tab. This morning, the Commerce Department said imports hit a record $206 billion in January. Still, Wall Street is rebounding. The Fed's move to help banks is giving investors a reason to buy. In the first 20 minutes, the Dow is up 250 points, more than 2%. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are also both up more than 2%. European shares have climbed 2% higher in the last hour or so. In Asia today, stocks gained about 1%. A cheer went up on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange yesterday. It had nothing to do with share prices. Some people were happy to hear that New York Governor Eliot Spitzer is in trouble for his alleged ties to a prostitution ring. Spitzer made a lot of enemies on Wall Street. Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
Eliot Spitzer made a name for himself as New York's attorney general. He was a crusader against Wall Street corruption. Spitzer investigations led to the resignation of the chairman of American International Group and a continuing case against the former CEO of the New York Stock Exchange. Now, some on Wall Street are having a good laugh at Spitzer's expense.
He scared the living bejesus out of me. And now look at him. Ha, ha, ha.
That's how Linklater's attorney Edward Fleischman sums it up. The former SEC commissioner says Spitzer's problems won't affect ongoing corruption cases.
He has been acting as a governor, not he hasn't been acting as the DA or the attorney general.
But the scandal will affect efforts Spitzer had been making to stabilize the shaky municipal bond business. The Financial Times reports he recently called top bankers, asking them to help bail out a bond insurer. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, March 11th on Marketplace.org. Boeing is pretty upset about losing a contract to build refueling tankers for the Air Force. The contract went to a group that includes Boeing's European rival, Airbus. Today, Boeing will file an appeal with the U.S. government. Stephen Beard has more.
EADS and its Airbus subsidiary have been bracing themselves for this since they and their partners won the Air Force contract. The deal is to supply aerial refueling tankers. Boeing is now appealing to the Government Accountability Office to overturn that deal. Boeing says the bidding was unfair. The Air Force changed its requirements in the middle of the process. But analysts say the real argument's about jobs. The Boeing deal would have sustained 44,000 jobs in the US, twice as many as EADS will create. Howard Wealdon of BGC Brokers says EADS has a major political fight on its hands.
It's happening in an election year, which doesn't make it any easier for Airbus and its EADS parents. This will be one of the largest battles we will ever have seen in the defence industry involving international players.
The GAO could take up to 3 months to review the deal. It could send the contract back for rebidding. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The National Institutes of Health is dependent on federal money, but for the last 5 years, the level of funding has stayed flat. Today, a group of researchers from several top universities will warn about the consequences. Jeremy Hobson has more.
If you're a biomedical researcher looking for major funding, there's really only one place to go. But Dr. David Farb of Boston University says the NIH funding faucet is slowing to a trickle, so there's tough competition for limited resources. He says young researchers are being turned off as senior scientists are turned away on their funding proposals.
Your top people are losing grants, and the young people see it and say, well, what if I achieve that and there's no safety net for me?
Dr. Jill Raphael Fortney of Ohio State University says some students from top medical schools are already starting to switch careers.
The people who, you know, are really poised to do translational research are going into private practice because they can't get funding.
And she says forget about relying on the private sector to fund research. Big pharma typically waits until the legwork has been done to get involved. Raphael Fortney will push for more NIH funding at a hearing this morning on Capitol Hill. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
India is one of the world's fastest growing economies. For the last 2 years, growth has been above 9%. But through it all, India has struggled to modernize. In Calcutta, for example, you still see fleets of hand-pulled rickshaws. The government is not proud of this, so it banned these carts. But as Miranda Kennedy reports, enforcing the ban is another matter.
Gopa Sen, a middle-class housewife, has always taken hand-pulled rickshaws to and from the market. She says these precarious, rattling tin carts on two big wooden wheels are a symbol of Calcutta. But the government says they're a symbol of oppression because they rely on a human to pull another human.
Do you ever feel bad when you're riding one of these?
I feel bad they don't have proper shoes or, you know, something to protect themselves. Banning it doesn't make any sense to me.
So far, the rickshaw pullers' powerful union, which represents the 20,000-some pullers on the streets, has prevented the government from enforcing the ban. Sabir Ahmed, who works with the union, says the ban is hypocritical.
The government says it's shameful for a man to pull another man. But what about all the other shameful jobs in India? They haven't banned the hand collection of human waste.
Mohammed Liaquat agrees it isn't fair to single out only this job as oppressive, but he admits it's pretty tough going. He's a scrawny 55-year-old, and he's been running his rickshaw through Calcutta's dirty, narrow lanes all day today, in bare feet, like he's done for 25 years.
It's really hard work. All day long I pull these heavy loads, and now that I'm older it takes a lot more out of me. And I can't go as fast anymore, so I make less money.
Mohammed, who comes from generations of rickshaw pullers, earns about $3 a day now. That's a lot more than he'd make back in his village. He's reluctant to switch to a cycle rickshaw, as many of his fellow rickshaw pullers have started to do. Still, even if the government doesn't enforce the ban, he doesn't want his son to carry on his work. So he got him a less physically demanding job, hawking vegetables on the street. In Calcutta, I'm Miranda Kennedy for Marketplace.
Last week, we found out how tough it is to start a business in Egypt. But in Israel, startups are booming, particularly technology companies. I spoke with Manuel Trachtenberg, the head of Israel's National Economic Council, and I asked him why the tech sector has taken off.
We are talking about entrepreneurial talent combined with technological proficiency. The second is we have the second largest VC venture capital industry in the world. And third, we have a long history of government policies that are very conducive to these sort of developments.
Okay, so obviously there are things that are driving the Israeli economy in a good direction. Still, there are concerns. As head of the National Economic Council, what troubles you?
First and foremost these days is the slowdown in the U.S. Our growth has been based mostly, but not only, on the growth of exports. And therefore, if there is a slowdown in the world markets originating in the U.S., that for sure will affect our economy.
What about inside the country?
The main problem lies in the lack of employment for the very poor. And those are concentrated in two populations, the ultra-Orthodox and the minorities, the Arab population. So what we are trying to do is to create employment opportunities for those populations, to provide them with the tools to incorporate into the modern economy.
This issue of the ultra-Orthodox population, can you explain exactly how that affects the labor force?
Well, we are talking about 8% of the population. The ideal of that society is the learned man, the continued study and excels in the study of the Bible. And the end result is that they don't have the basic education needed to integrate themselves into the workforce.
Mr. Trachtenberg, in the bigger picture, some of your neighbors across the way in the Gulf are getting a lot of attention these days for their economic growth. How much pressure does Israel feel to keep up with the Dubais?
I think it's great that there are moderate Arab countries that see in economic development the main goal. The economy is always a fertile ground for cooperation, so I wish there were more Dubais around us.
Manuel Trachtenberg, head of Israel's National Economic Council. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Hope you can catch our PM show's broadcast from Dubai this week. And all of our coverage from the Middle East is online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
Dubai's got jobs and nice beaches, a ski slope at the mall, but if you're moving here, a nice apartment's going to be harder to come by.
Move out from a two-bedroom villa to a small room. I mean, imagine my wife. I mean, how much angry she is still. She cannot stand it anymore.
I'm Kai Rizdal, a place to call home or not. The Middle East at Work, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.